Week four of the offseason takes us to Mobile, Alabama, and the Senior Bowl. We've been down here all week. We'll be staying through the game this weekend. I'm Andrew Mason. Thanks for joining me, as always, here on the Horsing Around podcast. Joining me this week, as he has every day on the radio, at least except for the days I couldn't be there because I was doing something else, Ryan Edwards of First and 10 at 10 on Orange and Blue 760. Ryan, pleasure as always.
Absolutely. Excited to be doing this with you, man.
Yeah. Now, you're bugging out on Friday, so by the time this hits, you're going to be back in Denver. Warm, cold, I don't know. I haven't even looked at the weather back there yet, so maybe you could tell me.
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd say, it's kind of like here where it's, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. pretty moderate. I'm sure my pilot on the way in will tell me everything about it, so... And but that, not snowing. I know it's not snowing.
And that faux southern accent. We got clear skies.
We got clear skies. And
48 degrees. Looking at a smooth landing in Denver. Thank you for flying.
Yep, every time.
Anyway, it's been an interesting week. Good week. I'd say a productive week for the Broncos coaching the North team. But I think let's just start where everyone wants to start. Let's start with the quarterbacks. Start with Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, the spotlight guys, the two guys that the Broncos got to work with this week. And I think while you don't want to go into the confirmation bias trap, I think both of them showed a lot of what we already knew about them coming into this week.
I think it's a perfect way to phrase it. And there wasn't, I'm not going to come away from this week feeling down about either of them. I'm not going to come away from this week thinking I learned something completely new. I will say, when it comes to Baker, some of the complaints about his arm strength are completely far-fetched and not true. I think that simultaneously, you can also look at Josh Allen and say, I did see some touch. I did see some of that red zone work, and he had his best day of the week on Thursday when they did the day three practice because he showed some of that touch. And simultaneously, I mean, we talked about that touchdown to Cedric Wilson in the back of the end zone. He had to thread that needle. Uh-huh. That was an incredible pass. And again, that also demonstrates the ability to sort of fit it into tight windows. Both guys look great. I'd say the completion percentage is going to put Baker ahead just a little bit, in my opinion. And, then it kind of comes down to whatever a GM or scout, when they look at those two guys and say, okay, well, I want these tangibles, I want these measurables, that's going to become more of the topic for a specific team than the ability of these guys to play the game.
Yeah, the measurables are going to come into play. I think also what kind of offense may come into play as well. That being said, I thought Baker Mayfield made some significant progress in terms of working under center over the course of the week. Looked a bit awkward at first on Tuesday coming from out of Oklahoma's spread offense and doing some under center concepts, but I thought was pretty smooth by Thursday, at least relative to where he mm-hmm. was on Tuesday. I think that was a good sign. And then you mentioned Josh Allen doing well in the red zone. Now, doing well in the red zone meant sometimes just firing it in there and showing his velocity and his raw arm strength. But at times, the touch on his mm-hmm. passes really improved. And that's the area in which he has the most growth potential. And it's an area in which he needs to grow. Otherwise, he's not going to be a viable pro quarterback, because if he can't take a little bit of a mustard off the hot dog, so to speak, then it's not going to be there for him, because he's not going to complete the kind of short to intermediate throws that you have to complete in order to succeed at the next level. We know that Baker Mayfield can complete those passes. Mm-hmm. We still don't know that yet about Josh Allen. I will say this, though. The fact that he had growth from day to day, that's key. I think when you come down here, you're looking to see how players progress from Tuesday to Thursday. Do they get better in the areas at which they're deficient? I saw that sort of improvement in Josh Allen. I saw that sort of improvement in Baker Mayfield in terms of the under center stuff. And also the criticism, like you said, of him not throwing in tight windows. I think you can kind of throw that out the window based on some of the passes that we saw him completing throughout the week that were in the tight windows. And also certainly the anticipation of receivers as they, as they were running their routes, throwing the ball before they made their breaks. That's the sort of thing you have to do at the next level. It was pretty remarkable to see him do that so well, even though he'd only been working with these particular receivers for this week.
you mentioned a couple of really great things there, and of course progress is what you want to see. You want to see over the course of the week them take that coaching, utilize it, and improve. And you hit it right on the head. I mean, the fact is, we kept remarking through the entire week about how much further ahead the North team was than the South team. And even in that sort of comparison, you got to realize these guys have never worked together. None of them. The coaching staff, the players. I mean, maybe there's been some scouting. Maybe there's been conversations. But, I mean, not like this. And so you have to kind of give credit there where it's due. I thought that the pace of the practices were great, the tempo, everything about it. And again, you know, we'll see how the game ends up playing out Saturday. But as far as I'm concerned, the Broncos got to work with some really top-end talent, some really top-end prospects, and this is going to do nothing but good things for them.
You could maybe argue they work with the two best players here, potentially. At least guys that did the best here. Now, there are other guys in the conversation. I think James Washington of Oklahoma State certainly has to be in that mix. In terms of talent, Marcus Davenport of Texas San Antonio, the edge rusher, he's certainly in that conversation, although he didn't really have a great week, although he had his best day, I thought, on Thursday.
Agreed.
But I keep coming back to Baker Mayfield and Will Hernandez of UTEP, the guard. We talked about him coming into this week as the guys who kept jumping out and saying, you know, here I, you know, almost saying, like, here I am. You know, take me. I'm the best guy. And Hernandez, in particular, I thought was astoundingly good at times up front.
Well, guys come into these weeks with hype. You know, that's just what it is. And you always want to see if they can live up to that hype, if they end up progressing over the course of the week. I mean, we talked about Davenport, for example, as a guy that we are really looking forward to seeing. He's projected to be a first rounder, had the chance possibly maybe to move up into the top 15, maybe even a top 10 guy in the first round. And we wanted to watch what he did. Now, the first 2 days of practice during the course of the week, I'm not saying he didn't make any plays. He just wasn't an impact guy. He didn't stand out, if you will. Doesn't mean that you should knock him down your draft boards. But you're right. Yesterday, he had a better day. He had that sack late in practice. I thought that was a really nice move on his part. And we'll see what he does from there. You know, but other guys like Will Hernandez came in with the hype. And boy, did he live up to it. I came away from this week, as I've been saying on our radio show, you know, declaring him the 40th overall pick in the 2018 draft going
if
to the Broncos.
If he drops that far, yeah, that's the thing now.
Yeah, that is a big part of this too. You know, and then Isaiah Wynn from Georgia is the other big-time guard here that's ticketed to be in the first round. So that's going to be kind of interesting how those guys go. Guards, look, the thing about it is there's the top-tier guy, Quentin Nelson. These guys I think should be in that consideration too. We're just sort of hoping now that he somehow sneaks through, and I just don't know if that'll happen.
Well, you know that Sean Coogler, his coach at UTEP, who is now working with the Broncos interior lineman, would love to have him, and certainly, you know, Hernandez loves being around Coogler. I think the feeling is mutual. They would both love to work with each other at the next level. We'll just see if they get that chance. But
I mean, do you get aggressive there? I mean, just out of curiosity, do you get aggressive to acquire him? For example, you know, you take your fifth pick and you draft somebody at five. I think, you know, there we'll have all sorts of different fun ways to dissect this over the coming months. But you draft somebody at five, likely a quarterback, and then do you consider getting aggressive? We've discussed the fact that the Broncos working with these prospects, a lot of them day one, day two guys, and so on and so forth, that they might fall in love with a guy. And knowing that history with Sean Coogler and Will Hernandez, you just sort of wonder. We've seen situations in the past where coordinators, assistant coaches have pounded the table. You remember Bill Kolar pounding the table for Adam Gotsis. We've seen situations like that before. So it wouldn't shock me. I'm just saying it wouldn't shock me entirely if the Broncos got aggressive, maybe even trading up to get Will Hernandez if they loved him that much.
Wouldn't shock me at the same time. If there are other guys that you like, and that's the thing, that when you get the exposure to these guys, and it's not just the North team, but they'll also see some guys on the South team during the Friday work, because the coaching staffs will flip for the walkthrough. So they'll get a chance to kind of talk and meet and get to know some of the guys on the South team as well. But so that's really 110 guys that you're going to have extra information on, kind of more background, a chance to see how they relate to your coaches, a chance to see how they work in practice. And so maybe yeah, you know a lot about Will Hernandez, but maybe you find out something about another guy and you say, okay, if we don't get Will Hernandez, we're comfortable with this next guy. That being said, I think Hernandez, if you don't draft Quentin Nelson in the first round, then Hernandez is a guy that I think maybe you try to move up a few picks. I'm not saying move back into the first round potentially, even though that might be what it takes, though. So,
well, you just have to sort of see. And you, of course, you know, there's a lot of intel during and around that time and a lot of rumors. And, you know, teams play games with each other. We all know that. You didn't have to watch the movie Draft Day to know that. But and we reference that movie a lot, not always for good reasons. But it just seems like the right guy near the right time. Mm-hmm. And we've said for a long time, hey, if you love a guy, go get him. And so it'll be interesting, too, with the quarterback at the top. You know, you and I have discussed that third overall pick with the Colts. You know, that could be an aggressive point for not just the Broncos, but many teams who are looking to get up there and get a quarterback.
And you have some capital to work with. Remember, you have the fifth-round pick coming from Atlanta for Tyson Barilo. You have fourth-round pick coming from San Francisco as part of the Capri Bibbs deal last year on draft weekend, where you shuffled around some picks as well. And you're probably looking at an extra third-round pick from the compensatory pool for losing Russell Okung. So you have some draft capital to play with if you want to move up a few slots early in round two, if that's what it takes. Like, for example, like let's say Will Hernandez is still on the board at the end of day one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider maybe making that move up to 33, the top of day two?
I do. Yes. Because you also factor in other teams that would consider doing the same thing. And they're all looking at that. And that tends to be the exact case for most teams, as they say, boy, I can't believe this guy fell into our laps in the second round. We got to get up and get him. He just strikes me as that. Now, look, it's not sexy. It's not, you know, us talking about getting the top wide receiver or getting the top running back. You know, we love Sony Michel, for example. That's a guy you might have to take. You'd have to take in the second round. No question about it, in my opinion. You'd have to maybe then trade up into the second round to get him if you really like Sony Michel. There's, you know, and at 40, he might be available too. So that's another decision you have to make. But the fact is, the Broncos have made a point that they wanted a certain type of guy on this offensive line, and Will Hernandez crosses all of that off.
340 pounds, big guy, strong guy, a real mauler out there, I think is the way that Troy Ranko of Channel 7 described him. It's a perfect word for him. We caught up with Will Hernandez on the practice field this week, myself, Ryan Edwards, and Steve Atwater for First and 10, so give that a listen.
All right, we're chatting here with guard Will Hernandez. Will, how's the process been so far for you, man?
I've just been enjoying it, man. This is something I've never done before, you know, something I never will do ever again. So I definitely want to enjoy this.
What's some of the coaching that you've gotten so far early on in the first couple days?
You know, mostly technical. They're hitting us hard on all the technique, you know, regarding the playbook that we have here. So, yeah.
How much does it help to have Coach Kugler out here working with you to kind of to help ease the transition into the next level?
Oh, it's definitely fun having him here. He's a great coach. He teaches me a lot, you know. I've learned a lot from him. You know, the playbook was given to us, to all of us. You know, it's new things. It's not all his stuff, so some of it is new to me. But definitely love having him here and him being my coach.
From the technique perspective, what do you feel like you have to show this week in order to maybe climb in the draft a little bit or be maybe taken by the Broncos?
Definitely got to get my hands a little tighter. Have to be a little bit more patient with my sets, not lean in forward too much, and be more lower at the point of attack.
We're chatting here with Will Hernandez from UTEP. That relationship you have with Coach Kugler, describe that. What's that been like? Remember when he was the head coach for you there at UTEP?
Coach Kugler's been a supporter of me since my freshman year when I met him. You know, he's always told me I could play at the next level, and he's always believed in me. And he's coached me that way, you know, hard but fair. You know, I love that guy. He's helped me out a lot. He's one of the main reasons why I'm here today.
Well, you may have asked this question already. I don't know. Are there any areas of your game that you feel like you need to work on while you're here at the Senior Bowl?
Yes, sir. Started with my pad level. Need to get a little bit lower, you know, attack more at the point of attack with lower helmet, lower pad. Need to get my hands inside, I'm a little too much in the shoulder area, and I need to be a little bit more patient on my pass setting, not lunge so much at guys and not try to, you know, kill them every play, be a little bit more technical with it and be more patient, but definitely firm.
Character-wise, what kind of lessons do you learn from going through a season like you guys had at UTEP this year?
Oh, I've learned so much, more than I have at any other season. You know, it's always the losses that teach you the most. Definitely feel like I can go through anything now. Definitely don't want to lose anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm hungry for a win, even if it's at the Senior Bowl. Just want to win.
Awesome. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
I'll tell you what I liked about Will Hernandez from that interview. Just very direct. No pretense. And look, he's a nice guy. When I, you know, when I went up to him and introduced myself, you know, complete gentleman.
Reached out his hand, shake your hand.
Looks you in the eye. Yep. All of that. But there's no fooling around with this guy.
No.
He just gets right to the point.
Well, and that's kind of, I guess, what you want your offensive lineman to be. It doesn't mean that they can't. We have many offensive linemen now in our business, in the media. They weren't all that loquacious when they were in the league, when they were playing for the Broncos or other teams. But yes, he reminded both of us of Lou Vasquez and just sort of the way that he presented himself. Different kind of player, not entirely, but different kind of player for sure. I liked how he kind of growls when he talks. It's just, it's just, again, there's just no messing around, and there's a personality there, and it comes across in his play. You know, it matches his play, and I really do appreciate that, and it's just sort of the way his game, you know, it matches up, and I dig that.
I think you'd be a good fit in that room as well. I think him, like Matt Paradis, you know, he's a guy that, you know, just will tell you what he thinks, and he's very, you know, very direct. And I think he, personality-wise, would mesh with the guys in that room. And the other thing with Will Hernandez, I think it's clear. If you bring him in, you're trying to get him in the starting lineup from day one.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, the question becomes, and now he's a left-side guy, so then the question becomes, you know, is that you want to keep Ron Leary on the right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to, you know, if Will already is there, I mean, it might fit perfect, you know, but we remember Ron Leary, of course, was brought here to be a left guard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of Max Garcia not really being able to fit there, they shifted things around and put Ron Leary, who, you know, again, didn't mind doing that, over on the right side. So if Ron Leary still feels good there and they feel like Will Hernandez, again, I kind of get goosebumps thinking about that interior. And really the possibilities. And the Broncos will still need to probably look at drafting an offensive tackle, maybe even addressing that in free agency with a guy like Nate Solder would be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, the offensive line, for as up in the air as it had been in years past, it's starting to take form. And the best teams in the NFL have those positions figured out, more or less, at least four or five of them.
Well, you're ahead of where you were last year.
Agreed.
If you're the Broncos. Agreed. Because there were question marks pretty much at every spot but center going into last offseason. Now, Garrett Bowles, you still want to see where he goes development-wise, but you know he's going to be starting for you at a tackle spot, and you know Ron Leary is going to be starting. You know Matt Paradis is going to be starting, assuming you bring him back. He is a restricted free agent. Let's not lose sight of that. And obviously you're going to want to give him a high enough tender to where teams don't try to poach him, but I would expect Matt Paradis to be back. So instead of being 20% of the way there, which is kind of where you were last year, you're basically 60% of the way there. So,
and once this offseason happens, you may be 80% of the way there.
Yes.
That's the beauty of where we're at. And not to interrupt you,
no, that's fine.
That's just such an important. I wanted to make sure we emphasize that you're 60 now. Mm-hmm. You could be 80 or 100 by the time you hit training camp. And that's so significant for the Broncos, regardless of who's starting at quarterback.
And I think the line across the board was better in 2017 than 2016. It wasn't always where you want it to be, and it did take some time to kind of gel. But I thought, particularly in the last month of the season, even after losing Ron Leary, I thought it played some of its best ball down the stretch.
Right tackle just was not what you expect. Now, injuries are what they are. You can only do so much. I mean, you got into your fourth string right tackle. Whenever you're in a season, if you know, you say, hey, we have to get to our fourth string right tackle, problems. Generally not a good thing. But, you know, they started off, they clicked early in the season with the run game. And I think there's some things you can build off of that. And I think you can take a look at what you did there and see, okay, look, if we can get that sort of figured out, assembled, and I'm with you. I think that, you know, you have Garrett Bowles, you have opportunities there on either the left or the right side, depending on what you do in free agency or the draft.
On to the defensive line here, because while Hernandez had a great week, I thought, in general, the defensive line was ahead of the offensive line during these practices. Some guys I liked Andrew Brown out of Virginia, especially as a guy in the interior who could, you know, mess up the run. I think you could see him as a potential 3-4 defensive end who could be that, you know, run stuffer on first and second down. B.J. Hill out of North Carolina State. We're talking about another NC State lineman. We talked about Kentavious Street last week. We're talking about B.J. Hill this time. He was always in the backfield. He was making plays. Deshaun Hand out of Alabama, he made some plays as well. Now, the question is he big enough to be a 3-4 defensive end potentially? May need to add 10, 12 pounds to get that to that size that you want him at, but made some plays, and I really liked kind of the one-on-one matchups that he had with Isaiah Wynn. You know, they were both – it was basically kind of a 50-50 going against each other. Sometimes Wynn got the better of him. Sometimes Hand got the better of the matchups. But I like the fact they kind of pushed each other and tested each other as well. Those were some of the guys that kind of jumped out to me from this week.
Yeah, I like Deshaun Hand a lot too. And he's a guy that I've seen in some mocks going pretty early. I mean, again, you know, sort of a late first, maybe second round kind of guy. May not be necessarily in the realm of where the Broncos could possibly draft. I agree completely about adding a little bit more weight. He weighed in at the official weight at 282. And as an interior defensive lineman, which is what he expects to play at three tech, you're just going to have a little bit more. But he's the right height. I mean, he's 6'3 and 6'8". I think that's about right where you want to be. You know, we sort of discussed that with a couple other guys that were at the Shrine game last week when they, for example, Chad Thomas, who they tried to play a little bit interior. By the way, he ended up getting hurt out here, which was kind of a bummer. But Chad Thomas, you know, was over 6'5", and as soon as they put him in interior, he got pushed back. He's just too big. So, yeah, I like Deshaun Hand. I thought your point about Andrew Brown, I thought Puna Ford had a pretty good week as well overall.
Better as the week went on. I liked what he did. He saw him getting some good push on Thursday in particular. And he's another guy. We're actually with Puna Ford and with Chad Thomas, we're talking about guys that were quite busy going from the East-West Shrine game last week to the Senior Bowl this week. I have to say, I think we saw more of those guys making the transition from the Shrine game to the Senior Bowl than we have in some years. Bilal Nichols out of Delaware, a guy we talked about last week, he got thrown in on Thursday. And I know that he's a guy that the Broncos have had their eyes on. And we'll see what he does on Saturday as well. But he had the pressure that led to a turnover in last Saturday's Shrine game.
I want to mention two other guys, and it was kind of a bummer that he got hurt because he could have been one of the stars of the entire week, is Nathan Shepard from Fort Hays State, defensive tackle, 6'5", 300 pounds. I thought he, at times, looked unstoppable. I thought overall,
Except against Hernandez.
you took the words right out of my mouth. Except against Hernandez, he tended to work his one-on-ones very, very well. He could be an interesting guy if the Broncos are looking for an interior defensive lineman late in the draft. I kind of like him a little bit, and maybe even, you know, depending on if you like him in interior or possibly as a defensive end, but probably the interior guy. Also, Jalen Holmes out of Ohio State. Wanted to make sure I give him a shout-out, defensive end, 270. He also had a big-time week. He is a guy that was able to get by Will Hernandez.
Yeah, one of the few.
Yes.
Maybe the only time that Will Hernandez really looked bad in a rep was against Jalen Holmes. Says a lot for what Holmes' potential is. But back to Hand, we did catch up with him on Thursday, talk with him about the week, and he had, at the end, talking about Alabama's ability to get back to multiple championship games over the last few years. One of the most fascinating answers that I've ever heard. I'm still trying to make heads or tails of it. It reminded me of the kind of answers that Norm Stewart, the former Missouri basketball coach, would give, and you'd be laughing and thinking, oh my gosh, where was he going with this? But, you know, a really cool dude, really fun guy to talk to. enjoyed watching him, enjoyed meeting with him. So give that a quick listen.
All right, we're talking with Deshaun Hand. How's this week been for you, man?
It's been amazing, man. It's a great learning experience. Just, you know, see where I'm at and what I got to work on. So, you know.
Saw some good battles between you and Isaiah Wynn. What do you kind of get out going against him on a play-by-play basis like that?
I mean, it's just a dog against a dog. You know, we just sharpen iron. So that's all it was. You know what I'm saying? It was just some good ball being played.
Now, have you learned anything from any of the coaches out there? And if so, what have you learned from them?
Yeah, just as far as alignment, my footwork, just not stepping under myself, you know, my hand placement, and just, you know, using strong hands.
How was this week working with the Texans?
It was amazing, man. It was a great experience, you know, and shoot, they interested. They know where I'm at.
How about how many other teams have talked to you over the course of the week besides, obviously, Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much talked to every team. And I mean, it's just been a great experience. You know, it's new for me. It's like a dream come true when you got, you know, NFL teams that have been on Madden that you've been playing since you was little, you know, talking to you. So it's just kind of like a video game but in real life.
Now, what areas do you feel like you need to work on in your game to go to the next level? Do you feel like you're good?
Right. No, it's always room for improvement. Ain't nobody ever just good. You know what I mean? Even the best player in the world, Tom Brady, you know, Peyton Manning, Von Miller, they always working to, you know, get something better. So, I mean, but for me specifically, just, you know, staying strong on that point of attack, not getting too high, and just keep moving my feet.
What kind of impression are you hoping you left on this coaching staff and as well as the other coaches you talked to?
One, that I'm a hard worker on and off the field. You know, I'm genuine, I'm honest, I'm a great athlete. You can put me anywhere, you can feel comfortable with me out there. I'm a quick learner, and I'm personable. I mean, shoot, you know. I get along with everybody, you know, and if you don't like me, I don't know why. So, yeah.
How much did it help you coming from Alabama doing a lot of pro-style concepts defensively to help you make the jump to the next level?
No, it was great because I had two great coaches as a D-line and, you know, overall just the staff in general. You know, you got Kirby Smart, Coach Pruitt. Then for the D-line coaches, you got Bo Davis and Carl Dunbar. So, you know, and then Saban, I mean, it just speaks alone, you know, so, yeah.
Do you feel most comfortable as defensive end or, you know, outside linebacker? Which one?
No, why you put me on the outside, man? I want to be inside. I want to be a three technique.
So, okay.
Yeah, but, you know, if need be, I'll do whatever I have to do. But, yeah, I want to go as three tech. Mm-hmm.
What was the reaction putting in a rookie at halftime in that game? I mean, we kind of talked about it. Yeah. I can't think of anybody other than Nick Saban that could do something like that and it all works out just fine.
You know, to be honest, I mean, it really wasn't no shocker. If somebody's out there, it's out there for a reason, you know. So it's just new to y'all. But, I mean, they always been balling, man. In practice, everybody balls. So it's no shocker to us.
When you're in it like that, do you have a chance to kind of appreciate the fact that you go to those national championship games in a row year after year? And what kind of remarkable accomplishment is to keep getting there year after year?
I mean, it's a great accomplishment. I mean, just imagine if you was a hunter, you know, back in the day, you know, when it was caveman days, you sharpening your tools, you watching prey for a whole year. And when that big buffalo come around, you done already went through so many drills all year and it's there. And, you know, you got to make all the right moves. Even if you mess up, you got plan Bs and Cs and Ds and Es. You know, you got so many plans, so you can't mess up and you can have your food for the rest of the year while you train for the next year. So then that's just what it is.
I never thought that anyone could compare a dynastic football program going to championship games multiple years in a row with hunting buffaloes.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned you mentioned your reference. I actually thought about Michael Bennett for a moment because he tends to say kind of outrageous things like that. The Bennett brothers, both of them, tend to say kind of wild things. But when he said that, I kind of started thinking about Bennett for a moment. But yeah, he's a star. He has a potential to be a star in this league. Mm-hmm. He had a good week this week. We were surprised by that. And he's, like I said, he's possibly a late day one, but definitely a day two prospect.
I think it'll be interesting to see what he weighs in at the combine and as pro day in March. That's going to be key for him. If you see him add 5 or 6 pounds of muscle, say, between now and pro day, that's going to be a good sign for him. If he's sitting there at 288, 290, I think that would answer the question that we raised, and I think that a lot of people might have about him going into the draft process. And if he does that, then I think you may be talking about him as a late first-round pick.
I also kind of dig that he wears number 9.
Well, here's my chance to say I hate the NFL's number restrictions.
Agreed.
I love seeing D linemen and linebackers wearing single digits, numbers in the teens. I think that looks fun. Like, I would like to see the number one on wide receivers, for instance. I think that's a perfect receiver number, and you can't have that in the NFL, and it's frustrating to me. Now, I know the reasons behind it. The league has cited, you know, player identification for fans.
Continuity. And, yeah. And, yeah.
But
maybe that's something the XFL got right. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I can't believe you went there, man.
I thought you'd like that.
Oh, oh boy. Well, remember how Doug Flutie was number 22 in college?
Mm-hmm.
And you think he was 20 for a while in the CFL. And then he got to the NFL when he got back. Well, first he was number two with the Bears and Patriots before he went to the CFL. And then he came back and he was number seven with the Bills and later the Chargers, and it just never looked right. Him in number seven, it just, no, I wanted to see him in 22. And the other thing I was thinking about, didn't Shannon Sharp in the preseason wear number one or something like that? I'm going to have to look that up now.
Yeah.
I have to find that out. We'll try to answer that question on the next podcast, the question that I'm asking and probably no one else is asking. I feel like Shannon Sharp at some point with the Broncos in a preseason had a single-digit number, one or two or something like that. And it would have been cool to see him in that, but alas, he made his name in number 84. And then he wore 82 in Baltimore. That's the thing. He changed numbers going to Baltimore.
You know, I kind of forgotten about that. I love that you pay attention to that stuff.
I think a lot of Broncos fans have tried to forget that Shannon Sharp was ever a Baltimore Raven.
I didn't forget that part, but yeah, especially because he won a championship. But yes, I did forget that he changed numbers.
He won a championship, and the first win of that playoff run was at the Broncos' expense.
And that's what I
remember. Yeah, on New Year's Eve in Baltimore.
Yep.
Gus Frerotte starting. Sorry, man.
All right.
Anyway.
We done yet? No, I'm just kidding.
Speaking of quarterbacks, let's just take it back to the group of eight quarterbacks that were here. It's obvious who the two best were. Who's number three?
That's a really good question. I guess if I, you know, coming into the week, you and I both, you got me into this guy, so I can't even take credit that I was scouting him the way you were. But Kyle Auletta out of Richmond is probably my number three. And he wasn't my number three coming in, though. Luke Falk was my number three pretty easily, right? I thought Luke Falk, I mean, I think he closed Thursday better.
By far his best practice.
Yeah,
was
he
Thursday.
Closed Thursday better. Then again, that practice for the North team was just an aerial display. Mm-hmm. I mean, the quarterbacks were having their way. They threw, it was really, I think it was Tanner Lee who had the one interception of the day, but otherwise, they just were shredding the entire secondary. But, you know, yeah, I'd say right now I kind of like Kyle Auletta. I thought he had kind of, you know, it wasn't brilliant all week, but I thought, you know, he threw a few A-type throws, and he showed, you know, great poise. I overall came away pretty impressed with Kyle Auletta.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, it's probably between him and Mike White out of Western Kentucky. Those were the guys I had right there. Luke Falk. Look, he's got a steep transition coming from the air raid offense to the NFL. And any team that drafts
just didn't look natural at times.
They're going to have to be patient with him. He might be really a 2 or 3 year project. I'll say this. He puts the work in. And this is like a little subtle thing, but he was always the first guy on the field.
Did
you notice that?
I did notice
that. We would get in. Now, obviously, we would get over to Ladd People's Stadium and do our show. And our show came on at 11 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Mountain Time. And the North team would not practice until about 12:30. So because we're there so early, we have a chance to see, you know, the Broncos coaches and staff setting up for practice. And on Wednesday and Thursday, Luke Falk, first one there. He was the Griswolds of the North team.
Yeah, he got in there. I mean, of course, I was watching for Mayfield, I was watching for Allen, but you did a great job pointing out, hey, look, Falk's on the field first, and then sure enough, the very next day, he was on the field first. Quarterbacks came out early to stretch. I'm not down on Luke Falk. I think you should put it perfect. You're just going to have to be patient with him. It seemed like it was a lot to digest within a few days for him at times. You're right. By the end of the week, we talk about progress, talk about wanting to see guys progress. He did. Oh, he absolutely did. But it wasn't to the level, I mean, clearly to the level of the other two quarterbacks, Allen and Mayfield. But I feel like Lauletta could get there. I think that he's got the intelligence. It seemed like he had the best sort of understanding and the pace when he was on the field of things. And he just didn't seem rattled at all, even when things weren't going right. And the South team, and people will see it during the game, the South team is just not nearly to the talent level of the North team overall.
Good receivers, though.
James Washington. Yeah. I mean, that's a number. That's a first round pick.
Jamon Moore too.
Jamon Moore
out of Missouri.
He had a good week. He closed strong. Another guy that kind of closed strong. Mm-hmm. I think this kid Pringle. That was what was it? Byron Pringle out of Kansas State. When we had a chance to talk to MJ Stewart, he said he was the toughest cover out there. And he made big plays on Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday, he wasn't much of a factor. Mm-hmm. But Tuesday, Wednesday, he was one of the absolute studs out there.
He was getting separation with his routes, which you always like to see. That's a good sign for him. To go back to Lauletta for a second, part of the reason why I think he distinguished himself and stepped up as the third-best quarterback here at Richmond, he had to learn a lot of offensive systems. He had four offensive coordinators while he was there, and every one of them obviously did some tweaking on things. So he ran a basic pro-style offense. He ran an offense with West Coast concepts. He ran an offense that had spread-style concepts. He ran an offense and he also ran offense that kind of mingled concepts from each of those. Had to often learn different plays, different verbiage, different nomenclature, and it didn't really affect him. It didn't hinder his play. And the fact that he has that sort of intelligence and quick processing to absorb an offense while handling a double major at Richmond. I mean, this is an incredibly bright guy.
And you can see that.
Yeah, and I talked to him earlier this week, and we're going to play that interview here in a moment. But one thing that really jumps out, one of his majors was leadership studies, which, as I mentioned to him, hey, that kind of comes in handy if you're a quarterback.
In the league, you know, even when I had a chance to talk to Josh Allen on Orange and Blue 760, you find out that really what it comes down to is your mental ability to process your, because once you get to this level, everybody can throw up spiral. Most people can fit into some of those tight windows, depending on, you know, overall strengths. But yes, Kyle Lauletta struck me as a very smart quarterback on the field. And, you know, I don't know if that makes him a starter or not. I mean, we've seen guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's a very smart quarterback, make a nice career out of them, make a nice career for themselves. Kyle Lauletta strikes me a little bit, not necessarily the way that they play like Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I'm saying as far as a very intelligent quarterback that could definitely play in this league.
Book smart, field smart. Here's my conversation with Kyle Lauletta out of Richmond. With the scheme changes from year to year, how much did the nomenclature of the offense change as well?
I think a lot of it stayed. I would say year one to year two was different. Year two and three were very, very similar as far as the nomenclature. Year three to four was very different as far as the schemes and stuff went. But every year, I mean, things changed as far as like formations and stuff. So, I mean, football is football, and even despite the different offenses, there's still some of the same base formations, but every year that those base formations switch names. You know, so I had to learn four different names for the same formation, you know, and then a fifth one right now. So, but that's all part of it. And, you know, some guys in the NFL are fortunate enough to stay in the same offense a while, and some guys aren't. You know, some guys move around and are asked to learn playbooks and learn it quickly. So I think I've proven that I've been able to do that throughout my career.
How much do you think that's going to help you, especially when you do the interviews and you're at the whiteboard and you're diagramming stuff?
It'll help a ton. I mean, I can even reference, you know, a certain play and say, oh yeah, a couple of years ago we called it this thing, or a couple of years ago we did it this way. But that'll help a ton. You know, just the recall and just being able to having to learn quickly and having to adapt to different coaching styles and stuff, it's helped me a ton so far.
Who else recruited you coming out of high school?
Well, I had offers from Toledo, Old Dominion. I had an offer from Towson, Holy Cross, and Richmond. I think those were my five. And, You know, I was very tempted to take some of those two FBS offers, one of those, but in the end I thought I fit best at Richmond. I thought I had an opportunity to get a world-class education there. And that, I think that was really the difference in the end for me.
And you got on the field soon. It seems like that helped kind of start the process for you in that pro-style offense back as a freshman.
Yeah, my first year at Richmond, I actually got some playing time, and then my sophomore year, I redshirted.
Yeah.
So then I was a three-year starter. Anytime you can start 3 years is huge. And I think that's helped me a ton, being a three-year starter. And, you know, throughout my training process, I was kind of looking back, watching the film from years prior, and I was like, man, you know, I couldn't even believe that was me in that first year, because I've made so much progress, and I'm so much better. I was so much better this past year than I was the first year I started, no doubt.
Have you talked with the Broncos at any point during this process yet?
Well, yeah, I have spoken with the Broncos, and I actually thought I was on the Broncos roster to begin with. I was originally on the North team, and they kind of switched me to the South at the last minute. So, you know, I was trying to watch some Broncos film and stuff, and then last minute they said, oh, just kidding, you're on the Texans. But that's okay. I mean, improvise, adapt, overcome. That's what it's all about.
What did you think of the film from what you saw from the Broncos?
I liked it a lot. A lot of West Coast things, a lot of stuff I was familiar with. You know, but a lot of the NFL stuff is similar. A lot of stuff crosses over. But I liked it. They were under center a lot. I like I said, I saw a lot of things that were familiar in years prior. And I think it's always a good film. I love watching NFL film because you just see how NFL teams operate and you know what their schemes are like and what their concepts are like. So I've always enjoyed watching that type of stuff.
What was your major, by the way, in Richmond? You talked about
I was a double major. I majored in business administration. I concentrated in marketing. Mm-hmm. And then my other major was leadership studies. So that was great for me.
Sounds ideal for being a quarterback. Exactly. You manage your money, but also the leadership part.
Yeah, University of Richmond established the first leadership school in the country. Okay. Definitely intriguing coming out of high school. Another reason why I wanted to go to Richmond. And that major was great for me, no doubt.
How much of the leadership studies, like the academic stuff, how much does that apply to football, Keechee?
It crosses over a ton, and a lot of what you learn, you can kind of see it, see how it comes out on the football field, and I've definitely learned, and I've definitely become a better leader and a better person from that. So I think at school it's very popular among the athletes that major, and it's helped me a ton, you know, because there's practical leadership and then there's, you know, the book side of it, but it's great to see how it coincides with each other, because there is a lot of crossover.
Do you think kind of applying those lessons, can you kind of see when you're in the huddle, when you're on the sideline, guys kind of responding to your leadership in that way?
Sure. I think, you know, one of my big things is situational leadership and treating every situation as a separate entity. You know, there's different players respond different to different leadership styles, you know, so people have asked me, oh, what's your leadership style like? I don't have one particular style. You got to be able to change your style based on who you're dealing with or what the situation's like. So that's something we learned in the leadership school, and that I can definitely see how you know, that's true on the football field, because everyone's different and you need to know who you're dealing with, you know, before you guide them or before you speak to them in certain situations.
I was really glad I had a chance to catch up with him. That was at the media day on Tuesday to kind of pick his brain a little bit. And, you know, there's actually an article, I think it's in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, suggesting, hey, Bill Belichick, I found your next quarterback. Citing in part the fact that he also has a lacrosse background. We know how Bill Belichick is big in lacrosse as well. And, of course, the Patriots, after trading Jacoby Brissett and trading Jimmy Garoppolo, they're looking for a succession plan at some point, once again, kind of hitting the reset button on that.
Yeah, if you could let us some time, I could see something like that. Maybe take him in the third or fourth round. I mean, that's a possibility that he falls that far. It's just going to be – it's such a unique quarterback class. And I really wish we'd had a chance to watch Mason Rudolph this week, because he's also an intriguing guy. I think he could sneak into the first round, probably more a second-round guy right now, dealing with that foot injury. But, hey, look, you know, LaLeta – that you're absolutely right. That could absolutely be a guy that the Patriots would target in the mid-rounds.
This week could have helped Mason Rudolph, and I think he could have made himself into a certain first-rounder. I still think he could sneak in simply because of the premium placed on quarterbacks. And also, if you see four guys go in the top 15, maybe even the top 10, mm-hmm. believe it or not, that wouldn't even surprise me at all, even though we mentioned, you know, sort of the ups and downs of Josh Allen, but the cliche, it only takes one team, and who knows when that early run on quarterbacks is going to happen. You may have teams trading up, especially if quarterbacks go 1-2, then teams are going to be fighting to kind of trade up to get those next two guys. And the domino effect could mean that you see six quarterbacks. That was my first mock draft, actually had six quarterbacks in the first round, and I'm still tempted to keep it that way after this week, even though Mason Rudolph wasn't here. I don't think he's a lock for the first round, but I think he's in the mix. And I think Lamar Jackson's in the first round mix, too.
He's a lock. Yeah, the allure of the fifth round option, or the fifth year option, sorry, the allure of the fifth year option makes it tantalizing to get back into the first round if you didn't already want to take a quarterback in the first round. You'll see teams trade back in because if you find the guy, if you hit, boy, not having to pay quarterback money to your quarterback for 5 years is so significant. And again, you know, some of these guys, like say Mason Rudolph, you're not going to probably make him a day one starter. You might want to give him a year or two. Well, then that fifth year option even becomes more important, in my opinion, because then you get 3 years of starter play out of him if you end up taking him. For example, say Pittsburgh. You know, for me, Mason Rudolph would be tremendous with the Steelers. And you're not, you know, assuming Ben Roethlisberger comes back this year, you're not starting him next year. You're not, maybe not even starting the year after. But thinking that Ben maybe has maybe 2-3 years left, that's not a bad succession plan. And having that fifth-year option would be significant as far as paying out that payroll salary.
Okay, before we go, give me the one player who was the biggest positive surprise to you this week.
Well, you have to give me a second on that. Biggest pot, so like I didn't know coming into the week what they were going to do. Well, I'll go a little bit outside the box. Not a guy that's going to be drafted day one, day two. And I might be stealing your guy here, but Braxton Berrios out of Miami was so much fun. And I had a chance to talk to him. We had that on our recap show during the course of the week. And you can just go find that at orangeandblue760.com. He's out of Miami, 5'9", 186. He's a punt return. He's a slot machine. He is Wes Welker. And he lays out his body. He gets good. He has great body control. He can body up to cornerbacks. It doesn't seem like the size of the DB that he's facing matters to him at all. And he's almost fearless. The way he plays the game, he's almost fearless. And he caught dang near everything thrown his way, even balls that you would have forgiven him for and said, okay, well, that was just almost impossible to catch. There was one on the Thursday practice, and you and I both smiled at each other after it happened because he dove and picked it right off the ground and got that 8-9 yard completion that, again, you remember the play. I mean, we could have forgiven him. Oh, boy, that was a tough catch. He got it, and he made plays like that all week long. In the Broncos, they need tight ends. They need a bona fide slot guy as a fifth-round guy, maybe. I don't know, but I thought he had a really fun week.
I'm going to go with a running back and a safety as my two guys. Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State, Falcon High School in Colorado, better than I expected, easily the most complete running back here this week. Very impressive start to finish. You know, inside, outside, catching passes out of the backfield. Clearly an every down back, clearly a bell cow type back. If that's what you're looking for, I think he's going to give good value for whichever team drafts him. And Kazir White out of West Virginia, and also going to mention Trayvon Henderson out of Hawaii, couple of safeties that were making plays throughout the week. Very impressive. And I think we'd all be remiss not to mention Shaquem Griffin out of Central Florida, who kind of confirmed what he showed on the film, just all over the field making plays. They were actually using him all over the place for the South team. He said he lined up everywhere from safety to the defensive line, was working as an edge rusher. So it'll be fascinating to see where he ends up in the draft because he's so versatile, but he's really hard to classify because of his skill set and size. You just know that he's a playmaker.
All right. If you're going to take more than one, then I got to
get one
more.
Go for it. Yeah.
Kamoko Touré out of Rutgers, outside linebacker, had a very good week. He got stronger as the week. Wednesday was one of his best days. He followed up with Thursday with a good practice. Kamoka Touré, outside linebacker, I think he has a very good shot at being a Denver Bronco. If you're looking for kind of mostly late round pass rushers, he could be in there.
Yeah, and he was, you know, I look at we expected from Marcus Davenport. What we expected from Marcus Davenport, we got from Kamoko Touré.
Yeah.
In the one-on-ones and in the team periods.
That, yes.
That's a, you know, a guy who was just winning matchup after matchup, getting in the backfield time after time after time. And I'd go back and rewatch kind of the one-on-ones and be like, man, he's making play after play. And it's not just one move. It's a variety of moves with him. And I'm looking forward to getting back to Denver and actually rewatching some Rutgers games and really kind of breaking him down a little bit more because he caught my eye in a way that that didn't really jump out when he was at Rutgers, but I kind of want to revisit him.
Oh, I'm going to go back and watch.
And
no,
see what I missed.
He was a standout guy, and he's one of those that if I would have been able to, if I knew more about him coming into the week, I would have paid more attention to him right away. But I also appreciate a guy that I didn't necessarily notice, and you just start seeing him make plays, and all of a sudden it's like, boy, he's in the backfield again. Mm-hmm. And I thought he had a tremendous week, and he's gonna be a very fun pickup for whoever gets him.
There are always guys like that at the Senior Bowl. That's why I love coming down here year after year. You learn more about guys.
Oh, I'm addicted to it now.
Yeah. Ryan, thanks for sitting in with me. For Ryan Edwards, I'm Andrew Mason. This has been the Horse and Around Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.